This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
We must guard against the military-industrial complex.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The power they took from the people will return to the people.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Shall I tell you what I find beautiful about you? You are at your very best when things are worse.
Sooner or later, though, you always have to wake up.
Be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas at veritasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home. To listen to part two of tonight's interview and all of our material going back to 2008, don't miss out and subscribe. It's very simple. All you have to do is click on the subscribe button of our website at veritasradio.com and you'll receive your login immediately. And have you listened to Sanitas Radio yet? Take a look at all the shows we've done so far and all the upcoming guests. You have no idea what these shows can do for you and your loved ones. You will never hear what they have to say in the mainstream media. I guarantee it. Remember, your greatest wealth is your health. Check it out at sanitasradio.com. And for MMS or our futuristic metal-cased USB drives with all our seasons and bonus material, go to the Veritas store. To get in touch with us, for member support, media inquiries, suggestions, you want to be a guest or are a whistleblower, click on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. And here's an update about the mysterious disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight MH370. According to Mitch House, Vice President of Freescale Semiconductor, 20 of their engineers, four of them American, were aboard the plane. The rest were Chinese and Malaysian nationals. Freescale is involved in the design and manufacturing of RFID chips to be implanted in the human body. These chips contain your name, digital image, fingerprints, physical description, current and previous addresses, family history, occupation, current income, fiscal information, all debts, criminal record, if any, vital signs, a new 18-digit social security number, and more. These were 20 engineers connected to RFID chips. Could these occupants have anything to do with the aircraft's disappearance? Could these engineers be so important? What did they know? Did they know too much? Could they be used by the secret elite for goals we are not aware of? Or was their cargo of the utmost interest? Very mysterious. As of this morning, the Australian government has reported that their satellites have spotted an object in the ocean, but a plane in the area was unable to find the object, located 1,466 miles southwest of Perth, Australia. For updates on this story, visit our website, our blog, and our Facebook page. And tonight, we discuss the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, banker suicides, Ukraine, echoes of 1914, and even cognitive liberty. Does the government or someone else have the power to invade your mind? All of this and much more with our special guest, Clyde Lewis, coming up right now on Veritas. And tonight, we welcome a powerful voice in the field of paranormal news and commentary. With a diverse background in news, acting, writing, and radio, a Veritas veteran from Ground Zero Media at groundzeromedia.org. I'm referring to our friend, Clyde Lewis. Hello, Clyde, and welcome back to Veritas.
Hello, Mel. I'm so glad to be on your program. I love Veritas. I've been a fan of Veritas for many years, and I'm so honored to be on the show with you.
Oh, it's my honor, and I'm also a fan of yours, as you obviously know. And in the past few days, there's so many news converging, and I thought we need to bring Clyde back because he has a great perspective on seeing things that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about. So let's start with an important one, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. You've written a lot about this. I've read a lot of news, and I want to see what your take is on this first.
Well, my take is, and this is something I'm probably going to debut on your show, is I'm beginning to wonder, because at first, my theory about the plane getting hit by a meteor was tossed around by CNN. And it was because I submitted to them the flight taking off into a meteor shower. Now, it's well documented that there was a meteor shower, huge one, fireballs seen in North Korea, South Korea, China, Malaysia. All these areas were seeing a lot of activity, Indonesia. And I posted the pictures of the big fireballs. There were huge fireballs. And the plane took off into this meteor shower. And I was thinking, you know, is it unlikely or is it likely that a plane would get hit by a meteor shower? We've had at least three close calls prior to the plane taking off. And what was odd is the two nights before the plane disappeared, I had a pilot named Tyler called my program. He was from Chicago. And he said, you know, Clyde, in the 7 years I've been in the air flying my aircraft, he says, I fly a commercial jet. He says, in the 7 years I've been flying my commercial jet, he says, it's interesting, but there have been at least three times where I've had close calls where a big fireball, you know, came within 15 miles of my aircraft. And he says, and there are a lot of pilots that are having this experience as well because of the increase in flight, and there's more flights down the sky, and there's more. We seem to be scraping through this, you know, this snooker table called space. And we were, you know, this is before the plane disappeared, so we were discussing this in length, and it was kind of interesting because I remember when I was investigating one of the first stories I investigated for Ground Zero, and when I worked for CNN. Was Flight 800, TWA Flight 800. I was thinking, oh, this is a lot like TWA Flight 800, isn't it? Because they said when TWA Flight 800 took off, the big fireball came up and hit it, or it came down and hit it. And I contacted one of the authorities at the National Transportation Safety Bureau, and I asked him, I said, so what was the ball of light that hit the plane? He said, well, he says, I need to tell you that NASA's here. And they're investigating the possibility a meteor hit the plane, but it's highly unlikely. I said, what are the chances? And he said, 1 in 10 million. And I said, okay, 1 in 10 million. But, you know, he says, chances of you winning the lottery are higher. Chances of you actually getting struck by lightning are higher. And I said, oh, okay. Well, people still get struck by lightning, and they still win the lottery. So it could be possible, highly unlikely. And then I looked at the statistics, and I realized that, you know, you're more than likely to be hit by a meteor than being a terrorist attack. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll go with that. So for a while, I was talking about this theory, and I was saying this is what could have happened, and it still could, because a lot of hypotheses have been thrown around by the media. It's just hypotheses. We need to remember that theories, such as mine, and the other theories that are out there as well, and the other hypotheses that are being formed, are that, because we have no evidence. We have no plane, we have no crew, and we have no passengers. So any story can be made up, any story to fit the fears of everyone. And it seems to me that in the beginning, the very fears that everybody had, the fear of pilot malfeasance or the fear of pilots or crew members who are fanatical or whatever, would cause a plane like this to be hijacked, refitted, and maybe a bomb placed on board. So I got to thinking about scenarios like that, and I've been thinking about, once again, you know, they're telling us that we're reliving 1914, that we're preparing for war, World War I, World War II, depending on which war you decide you want to make comparisons with. I mean, if you want to call Putin Hitler, you know, I guess you can, but I mean, it's not a good analogy at the moment. But you look at this plane, and as I said, this is the first time I've ever said this, so I'm saying this on your show first, not even on my show, that if this is how we think the plane came down, if we think the plane was hijacked or it was shot down or it was carrying something that would be considered a weapon, then what we have is we have a comparison that could be placed with the Lusitania, which, of course, was a boat that was sank by German U-boats because it was allegedly carrying munitions and other ordnance. So as I am talking on your program, I'm beginning to wonder if what that plane is our version of the Lusitania. It's not a ship. It's a plane. They had been carrying some sort of cargo or maybe carrying something else that needed to be taken to, I don't know, some place like maybe Pakistan or one of the stands, Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan or any of these other areas, or perhaps even Afghanistan. And what's interesting about it is that it could have been shot out of the air by something, maybe even us, and we don't want to admit to it.
But if that's the case, there are so many things that can ping back, quote unquote, ping back to many companies. You know, take the engines as an example. Rolls-Royce, they get pings, and I have relatives in the airline industry who tell me, first of all, whenever a transponder in a commercial airliner is turned off, every officer of the airline gets a text immediately after it happens, first of all.
Sure.
Then
Well, and here's the thing, Mel, here's the thing. The media can choose who they want to speak to. I mean, I wanted to talk about my meteor theory, and no one wanted to talk to me. They don't want to talk to anybody that doesn't fit their agenda.
Of course.
And the agenda that they're pushing is a pilot who has fanatical views about a political party. They want to push that. Why, and this is what I talked about on my show the other night. What we are doing anymore is that when tragedy happens, we are more than likely interested not in the people that had passed or that had died or that had been killed. We're not interested in the humanity of the affair or the lack of humanity in the affair. What we are interested in are statistics, technicalities, and political leanings of the villains. And we want to study the villain more so than we want to study the humanity of the people. And we are desensitizing ourselves to the fact that when tragedy like this happens, when people are on planes that disappear, there are tragedies. There are people who die. When people are shot in schools, there are people and children that die. And that is why you hear now of people having conspiracy theories. They call them conspiracy theories, but they're investigative of perhaps hoaxes or perhaps things like at Sandy Hook when they were talking about how there were crisis actors and perhaps no one died there, the children, it was all faked. That's why we're getting this, is because of the fact that we do not take the time to look at the humanity. We didn't hear about every child and how they were a loss to their families. We don't watch the families grieve. In fact, we see families being propped up like actors coming on television and saying, well, this is my family. And it's so lacking in humanity, so lacking in any kind of feeling, that it just makes you wonder about whether or not it's all real or if it's all staged. It's all a stage show. It's because of the fact that here in the United States, unlike other countries, we here now have this inability to care. So we're creating for ourselves something called bystander syndrome. We are being psychologically numbed to the humanity of every activity that happens. And it could be the reason why we don't get out in the streets and protest. It could be the reason why we don't all march to Washington and demand that Barack Obama go. It could be those reasons because we just say to ourselves, well, this is the way of the world. It is the apocalypse, and this is how it's going to be. And so we find ourselves losing our humanity and being more interested in perhaps standing and watching and taking out our smartphones and recording it rather than helping the people that are in tragedy, that are having the tragedy.
And unfortunately, the mainstream media just gives us their side of the story. And if you believe everything they're telling you, maybe you need to reconsider. But, you know, speaking of the pilot, the captain, supposedly a fanatic. And when we say fanatic, I started looking into it. And he was a fan of an opposition leader who was sent to jail for the crime of simply being a homosexual, the opposition leader. So I wonder if the Malaysian government is hiding information because they don't want to bring the world's attention to that country based on that crime of being homosexual. Anybody who is homosexual basically goes to jail.
Well, I mean, and that's another thing too. People know, and this is all I see, okay? You know, I sit in a room every night when I do my show with monitors, the monitors CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, okay? And I see all of the images. And all we see, you know, with the sound turned down, are the images of this pilot and the words fanatic and the words radical. And all he was doing, as you say, was that he sided with an opposition leader that happened to be gay. And so what do? We show him in a shirt saying democracy is dead.
Right.
We put him in front of a flight simulator. And I don't know how many times I've been sent letters saying he had a flight simulator in his house. That makes him suspect.
So
really?
What?
It makes him suspect. Yeah. Of what? I know. And people, you know, they'll latch onto something and they'll think, well, he's a fanatic. He has a flight simulator in his house. And then we'll be hearing about how he only learned how to fly. He didn't learn how to land. I mean, this type of stuff, I remember when 9/11 happened, they were telling me things like, you know, Clyde, those pilots that flew those planes into the buildings, you know, Clyde, they didn't learn how to land. All they learned how to do was fly. I'm going, so that means that when they were training, they didn't land the plane that they were training in? That they didn't learn how to land? Because, I mean, if that's the case, they're still flying over Florida, ladies and gentlemen. And that's the thing. Sometimes you have to stop and say to yourself, what kind of nonsense are you being fed, even in with people who claim that they're telling you the truth with regards to alternative news? And I always laugh when people tell me that old story about how the pilots that were training to fly those planes into the World Trade Center and into the Pentagon, they were being taught only to fly and not to land. And I'm thinking, huh? So that means that they never landed the planes while they were training. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Definitely. And the question, this begs the question: why are we giving our critical thinking to someone else? In this case, to the mainstream mediaopoly.
You know, I really don't know. And here's the thing that's interesting: as I have done in the past, I mean, I did a lot of shows about this plane, and it got to a point where every caller I had on my show was repeating the other caller. And I realized, I told my producers, I said, I need to bug out of this story. And they said, why? It's hot. I said, it's not worth the trouble, because people are going to be talking themselves into the ground, standing by their theories and speaking about them as facts. And then the media is going to do the same thing. And the media did the same thing with the Boston bombing. I remember when the Boston bombing happened, I was following the suspects as they were being chased through Watertown. And I remember telling my news editor when he came in, because I stayed after my show and I went live with full coverage until like 3 a.m. And I figured it'd be fine to do it until 3 a.m. because 3 a.m. is 6 a.m. in New York. And that, you know, by the time I'm finished, coverage would be on the networks and they would broadcast the network coverage and I would have to worry. Well, here I was following, local coverage of the chase, that was happening in Watertown. And I was following all of it on local reporting, what the local reporters were reporting. Saying this is a local station reporting this, this, and this. And then by the time I walked out of the studio at 3 a.m., I walked in to talk to this guy named Steve. And I said to him, I said, Steve, no matter what you do, do not trust the mainstream media on this story. They are going to screw it up. They're giving erroneous information. I've been getting information from source in the area where it's happening. And he looked at me when I first said, and he says, well, you know, Clyde, you're good, but you're not that good. And I looked at him, I said, dude, I said, I am good, and I'm following this, and you can't come in here and tell me that you're just going to parrot what the mainstream news, mainstream narrative is, because it's a corporate narrative, and it's giving us nonsense. And wouldn't you know it, by the end of the day, ABC, CNN, well, actually CNN, and a number of other stations had to apologize because they were reporting, as they put it, erroneous information, and that their sources weren't reliable. And I had said to one of my companions that was working with me, I said, you know what their source was? It was Twitter. And I said, I don't think they want to admit that it was Twitter, but it was Twitter, because there was a lot of stuff on Twitter that was erroneous as well. And so, you know, we're living in times where, and I've told my audience that they need to understand this, that the Fourth Estate is dead. It's been dead for a long time, and it's even harder for people to get the right information. So what they have to do is, when they do get information, and I'm not saying tune out the mainstream media, because the mainstream media is one source of information, but you need to vary your sources of information. And when you do vary those sources of information, be objective. Don't believe something that you're being told because it fits with what you feel is correct. I always tell people, you know, when I'm speaking and I say something you agree with, you believe I'm telling the truth. But then when I say something you disagree with, you think I'm lying, or you think that I'm telling nonsense. Well, here's the deal. I am telling you what I feel is happening, and I'm doing it honestly. I'm not telling you I'm giving you the truth. I'm just giving you honesty, and I think that's the best I can do right now in times where truth is a casualty of this war for your mind.
And I think it's everybody's responsibility to do their own research. And when I say research, I don't mean Twitter. I don't mean to go out there and find, you know, only alternative sides. Do your own research. Use your critical thinking. And I think one of our listeners said it best. Quote, he said, this is a big exercise in re-educating people to accept the notion that the truth cannot be known, and therefore theories heaped on announcements heaped on opinions heaped on pure speculation are the new truth. Unquote. What do you think about that?
I fully agree with that statement. I think that statement is profound, and it should be heeded, because of the fact that even I tell my listeners and I tell my audience that even though I'm reporting what I feel is the correct story, I may be reporting something totally wrong. I'm only as good as my sources. And that's the thing, is that you need to remember that you're only as good as your sources. You're only as good as who you bring on the show. You're only as good as your credibility allows you to be. And if you're constantly giving out information that can be determined to be false, then, of course, people will finally figure it out. And when they do figure it out, then they will abandon you eventually. I don't want to be abandoned. I think that I personally want to bring out information that when I look into it, it looks like something that would be valid. And that's why I'm not the type of person, you know, people always ask me, why don't you bring up this guest? Or why don't you talk about this guy or talk with this guy? And I say to them, well, you know, that's great for other shows. And my competition is very fierce because of the fact that I'm on before Coast to Coast AM in most markets. And I have to, you know, I listen to George and I hear what George does. And George does something that's totally different than what I do. And I always see myself as, like, you know, I'm cutting edge. I'm kind of like the biker of the paranormal and conspiracy theory crowd. And then George is like the old grandpa, uncle, or whatever you want to call him, wants to sit down and say, well, kids, let's gather around and I'm going to tell a story. So pop some popcorn. I'm going to tell ghost stories. That's great. I mean, if you like that kind of, you like that kind of approach, then you're going to be listening to Coast to Coast AM, and most people do, because he's on all over the country. But when you have me on the air, you know, what you're going to get is you're going to get honesty, and you're going to get some cutting edge stuff. Sometimes it's going to be uncomfortable. And man, I've had a lot of, I guess you could call, harsh words with people who, they send me mail where they're yelling at me and telling me off and all this. And I just say back to them, you know, look, I don't have to be nice to you. I mean, if you're going to come in here and be nasty to me, we can have a conversation. But if you're going to be nasty to me because it doesn't fit your, I guess you could call it, truth or your your ideology. I mean, I'm not here to stroke you and groom you and say, yes, believe everything the party tells you. Yes, being a Republican is right. Yes, being a Democrat is right. What I'm saying to people is, you know, the right-left, you know, paradigm, the right wing and the left wing are very successful in getting the bird of despotism to fly, and they're doing a great job of it. And it's never about the red state or the blue state. It's always been the state versus you, and that's always been how I see it, because it used to be the journalists like you and me and others, we are in that realm. We were the fourth estate, and the fourth estate has always been the information source to keep the empire, the emperor, the king, the president, honest. And I don't think that the media does that anymore. They don't challenge the media. I mean, they don't challenge the administration. They merely parrot it and smooth it over so that whatever their decisions are, we follow like serfs. And I think that's silly, and I think it's sickening, and I think that and that's why I get annoyed when I watch the news sometimes, because they just demand that we follow and kind of like walk around like, you know, like little sheep, little bunnies, wondering what we should fear next. And I just don't like it.
It's just simply the Ministry of Propaganda. I mean, you mentioned the Boston bombing. And let me just mention this. You remember probably seeing the news when the older brother, one of the alleged terrorists, was caught. He was naked with handcuffs going into the patrol car. All of a sudden, they changed the story the next day, and we saw a picture of him massacred, killed. What do you think happened there? Somebody hack into the story?
I think that it was the police. They ran over him several times with a vehicle. There were several witnesses said they did that, and then they took his body, and what they did is they basically took him into custody. We saw that,
yes.
And then they took him to an alleyway, and they ran over him. It's a case of police brutality, and it happened. And it's also there was a number of people that were citizen journalists that you hear these so-called terrorists telling the police, "We have no guns. Stop firing. Stop firing. Stop firing," and they keep firing on them. And I'm not saying that, you know, sympathy should be given to anyone who's committing an act of terror. But, you know, in this country, in the United States of America, where we're supposed to be free, we should demand due process when it comes to criminals. And I don't care if you're a scumbag. I don't care if you have murdered a whole school, or I don't care if you're caught red-handed, you know, killing, you know, someone very important. You deserve to be taken, placed in jail, and you deserve a trial with a jury of your peers that is guaranteed by the Constitution. And when we see this brutality happening, or we see the police shooting people, and they don't have a say, and then they go and they turn around and they malign someone. Like, for example, the case of Miriam Carey in Washington, D.C. Miriam Carey allegedly ran the barricade at the White House and allegedly threatened police officers with her car and allegedly wound up at the end of the line. And when she walked out with her hands raised, they executed her in public and took the baby out of the car. And then to add insult to injury, they were able to go back into her medical records and report on the news that she had postpartum depression, and that postpartum depression had triggered her into thinking that Barack Obama was speaking to her in her brain, and that's why she went to the White House. We once again lose the humanity here. A woman was gunned down by police officers who reacted in the wrong way. She was executed. The child was taken from the mother and was not surrendered to the family. The siblings of this woman, one was a nurse and the other was a police chief, and both of them had said that the way she was treated was wrong and there was no reason for this to happen. We are told, which is all erroneous, which is all false, because I talked to the Secret Service agent that was there, that she ran a barricade at the White House. She absolutely did not. She wound up in a wrong place, and she wanted to get out of there as soon as the gunfire started happening. And then to add insult to injury, after it was all said and done, to take complete and total blame off the officers that shot her and killed her. They had to go and say that she was mentally ill. And everybody that I talked with said, well, obviously she was crazy. She was going to be a threat to the officers, and that's why they killed her. And I thought to myself, I see. So running away from police officers and being mentally ill is a capital offense and deserves to be having an open execution without due process. The Americans need to understand that there are things that we do as Americans that make us Americans, that show that we have humanity, that we are above what goes on in other countries with dictatorships. But it has changed now. We are just as bad as any country now because of our administration and the men that are there that are basically encouraging World War III. People like John Kerry, people like McCain, people like Lindsey Graham, Peter King, Mike Rogers. I can give you a whole name of these fear-mongering, war-mongering. There's no word to describe the low life that exists in Washington that keeps pushing the idea of bringing people to the meat grinder and grinding their bones and their blood and their flesh in order to create mortar for the New World Order. It is something that makes me want to vomit. And every time I point it out, I can't believe people will still fall for their nonsense and vote for these guys. It's not worth the trouble.
I just cannot believe it either, that we might be getting into another war now. And, you know, we'll come back to the Malaysian airliner in a minute, but let me go to Ukraine for a second. You know, we are here listening to the media parrot the same stories. Look what Russia is doing, invading a sovereign country. And they had people vote to secede. Isn't that what happened in Kosovo anyway?
I mean, here we are again. And we're speaking, it's just the hypocrisy and the hubris of this administration. And people believing that the United States, when they start flexing their muscles, are right. And we're not even flexing our muscles. We're like, you know, taking the tetherball in the playground and hitting Putin in the back of the head saying, ha ha! It's not even worthy of anything. It's like, what, a couple dozen Russians aren't going to be able to come to the United States and stay at the fancy hotels that they want to stay at and eat steak and caviar on our dime. That's the sanctions that they push on Russia. And then what happens is Putin looks at Obama and laughs, saying, this has got to be a joke. And Prankster. Not only that, I had said on my show, here we go, guys. This is what's going to happen. Crimea is going to vote to be with Russia. I had a number of Ukrainians. I had a number of Russians saying this is what's going to happen. And the reason why is because they would rather be with the devil they know than this devil that we are siding with, and that is Svoboda, which, of course, is the neo-Nazi groups, the Banderas, the neo-Nazi groups that are there that have basically taken over Ukraine, and we're giving them the blessing. And it was already, I mean, if you look up online Victoria Nuland's phone call to Jeff Pyatt, okay? Victoria Nuland, whose husband orchestrated the shock and awe attacks, she was on the phone with Jeff Pyatt, who said to him, look, we're going to push this thing. We're going to bring in all these guys, these radicals, and then F the EU,
F the
she
EU.
Says.
Yes.
Because the EU is supposed to, what's that?
No, I'm saying F the EU, correct.
Yeah, you should listen to that phone call. That phone call is the linchpin in all this. They planned this. This was a case of kicking the fence in hoping that the dog Putin would bark, and eventually bite. And then when he didn't bite, but barked a lot, and when the people said, oh, we'd rather be with the big bad dog that we know instead of this big bad dog that wants to eat us up like they eat everything else, the Western European Union, the Americans go, wait a minute. You know, we have our interests in the European Union. If you don't let them take over, then we certainly feel that this is an illegal action, that we just don't go walking into countries and take over under false pretense. Oh, okay, John, why don't you tell us about the weapons of mass destruction, you moron? But he won't do it, and people forget, and yet, oh, President Obama, his Nobel Peace Prize is looking really good right now. And I just think that this whole situation. People need to know that they're being buffaloed, and that, no, you don't take sides like a football team, because this is like aliens versus predator. I mean, no matter who wins, we lose, okay? And no matter who wins, the Ukrainians who really want Ukrainians, not the strange Ukrainians that are not the crazy Ukrainians that are basically, siding with the neo-Nazis or the other ones that are siding with Russia. Real Ukrainians who want real independence are not being hurt. And that's the problem.
No, they're in the middle. It's basically going to EU and central banking and giving the bailout, which means they're going to be slaves for the rest of their lives, or going back to, as you'd say, the devil they know. But I've always said, if you poke the bear, and in this case, Russia, the bear, in the eye enough times, the bear will become disagreeable. I mean, what have we done in the past decades encircling Russia all the time? And now we're just poking the bear once again. It will become disagreeable. Where do you think this is going?
Well, it's going where the United States, who was praising in the 80s, the decision of Russia to become a democratic government, was so happy that they decided to come over to our side, has now all of a sudden turned the older generations into believing that the communists now are taking over, that Hitler is alive and well and in the embodiment of Vladimir Putin, which is nonsense. And anytime you say this, oh, you're just siding with the propaganda with that bastard Putin. No, I'm not. I'm looking at this in an objective way. The objectivity here is that you have a leader. Now, let's stress this in big, bold letters. You have a leader, underline, named Vladimir Putin, who gives a damn about his own backyard, who's willing to fight for those who live in his own backyard. Then we have Barack Obama, who, while our own backyard is turning into Battlefield America, he decides that he wants to get all testy and pissy and get into a match with Putin, and basically with his war hawks like John Kerry and John McCain are standing there wanting so badly for a nuclear bomb to be going off somewhere in Europe, or even in the Midwest somewhere. I mean, what did Lindsey Graham say about South Carolina? Oh, a nuke can be set off there. He's saying that because it's not that he doesn't want it to happen. He dreams that it's going to happen. He wants it to happen. Why? Because they want that bloodlust. They are a bunch of psychopaths. And all we do is we just sit there and go, oh, they can't be that bad. They have families. They're wearing suits and ties. Look, put them in Nazi outfits. They're the same psychopaths, just like Hitler was and everyone else that followed thereafter. And that's why I'm just so sick and tired of people believing, because their trust cannot be challenged. Well, it's being challenged now, and the truth is a casualty in this war.
You know, I used to buy the media back when they used to demonize Putin until the conflict in South Ossetia and Abkhazia in Georgia, the former Soviet Republic. And when I found out that in reality it was the Georgians who were bombing the area and the Russians came in to protect their people, the media was totally on the other side here. That's when I said, let me look at Putin in a more objective fashion. And I can't say he's a saint, but I'm looking at him as a leader, really.
But see, this is the problem now, is if you say what you just said, if you say, well, I look at Vladimir Putin as a leader, and I look at him as looking out for his own people, people immediately think that you think that he is just some God's gift to the planet. People think that you're excusing him for what he's done in the past. That's the thing, is that we hold over people that we want to create as the other. So many things that we need to hold over our own leaders, that we need to get out in the streets and basically do the same thing that these other countries have done and demand integrity, demand accountability. But we're not. And the reason why is because we have no humanity left. We have been so beaten. We have been so lied to, and we've been so bamboozled, if you want to use that phrase. We're not even willing to just do something that would upset the apple cart. And I don't mean, let's take out an entire city block with bombs or guns or anything like that. But there's nothing upsetting the apple cart. Nothing that's reminding them that the people have the power, because we have been so stripped of our power of opinion, our power of objectivity, because the media is just keeping us, they're just basting us in nonsense. And we follow it because we don't have any other way of following something different. Most people don't have time. And most people, when they get off work, don't want to hear about what's going on in the world. They'd rather sit down and watch, Dancing with the Stars or something that was just like meaningless entertainment. Why? Because this is how it is. The breads and circuses of Rome. Yeah. Let Rome do their military campaigns. And as long as I'm breathing, living, and my family is okay, I'm thankful for Rome. And that's exactly the way people feel about the United States.
I'm jumping around a little bit, but since you mentioned earlier on TWA Flight 800, I left for Asia, to Malaysia, actually, the day after that flight, and I was a little concerned. What do you think happened with that flight?
I could tell you that it was that it exploded in midair. I could tell you that it's been hijacked. I could give you everything. I just cannot at all. And I've talked with a number of people, even pilots, that say that they could come up with a theory, and it would just add to the many theories. I would say that the plane's been destroyed. I would say that, I really don't want to let go of my theory that something from space hit it. I really don't. But I have to now because of the fact that if I hold on to it, I look foolish because the media is pushing what they call authoritative statements from pilots, authoritative statements from the Malaysian government, authoritative statements that they want to push certain agendas. I think that if we're to just strip it away and not give in to the idea of alien abductions or wormholes or meteors or any of the other theories I've heard, we may just know that the pilot that was in the cockpit fought with the other pilot, and he probably just brought the plane down.
By the way,
it was a suicide.
I meant flight 800, TWA 1996, to put things in perspective. I wanted to get your take on that flight in 1996, just before the Olympics in Atlanta.
The TWA flight 800?
Yes, what's your take on that one? Just so we can put things in perspective with this flight.
The NTSB told me it was a meteor. And the reason why the story didn't take on was because of the fact that no one was willing to believe it was an act of God, because they wanted to sue TWA and Boeing for negligence.
Is that right?
I'm not kidding you. That was what I was told by the NTSB. Uh-huh. That NASA was investigating the possibility of it being a meteor, because there was a flight in 1995, I believe it was Lufthansa flight. It's a well-known UFO case where they were flying over the very same area, and they were talking with Boston Tower. And they almost got hit by one, that and a British plane. And they discussed it, but it's been considered a UFO story, not a meteor story. But the truth is that it was a huge rock, and it was a meteor shower that they were in the middle of, and the plane almost got hit. I don't know. I just think that the NTSB told me that it was either a meteor or a rocket that hit 800. And there was also a guy in England that believed that the Lockerbie plane was hit by space debris. There was a story out of Chile, as a matter of fact, where a guy was flying a commercial jet. I think it was from Chile to New Zealand. And he had to avoid a Russian rocket casing that was coming down out of the sky. And he saw it. He said he saw the writings on the side of the casing. It was burning up. He said he could see it. It was that close. There's space debris out there. It's coming at us. And we've got something the size of Rhode Island that's supposed to be passing overhead in the northeast, I believe, on Wednesday or Thursday. Or actually, tomorrow. Yeah, gosh, here we are. Tomorrow, for those of you that live in the northeast, you'll be able to look up in the sky. And for 14 seconds, the starlight will dim or will darken completely black, because this huge rocks could be flying over your area. There you go.
Well, just imagine if this is true, and it's space debris just falling around, and something like this is confirmed. What could that do to air travel?
Well, it could disrupt air travel. I mean, that's why, okay, whenever a volcano erupts, what do they do with the planes? They reroute them. Why? Because rocks that are flying into the sky, that are going two times the speed of sound, being hurled up into space, man, something that it's the size of a thumbnail could be like a razor blade cutting into a plane and just obliterating it. You saw the movie Gravity when the space debris hit the shuttle and hit the space station.
Yes.
Turned it into toilet paper, like watching a pinata explode. I mean, that's what happens to a plane if it's hit by something going three times the speed of sound, about the size of a grapefruit or a baseball or even a thumbnail. Boom, it's gone. No trace of it. And when there's no trace of crew, when there's no trace of people, when there's no trace of plane, we can make up all kinds of stories that fit our agendas if that's what we wish. And so far, there's no evidence of a plane, no evidence of pilots, no evidence of anything. And there are people that are going to say, well, Clyde, what if there was no plane to begin with? Okay, what if there wasn't? that's what people do. They go to the logical explanation is there was no plane, i.e. Pentagon, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, no early warning with these meteorites falling down, no evasive measures, so it could happen, definitely. And, another thing a lot of people don't look at, it's 17 years before 9/11, and I would say it's even more than that. A Boeing 720 was flown by remote control. The technology has been around, since the 70s or 80s? You remember all those hijackings in the Middle East in the 70s and 80s. Boeing and all American airplane manufacturers had that technology there, and even our Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Richard Myers, openly admitted recently that governments have the capacity to take control of airliners remotely. Is this a possibility, in your opinion?
Oh, sure. I mean, there was a television show called Pilots. It was the Lone Gunman, and I had
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I talked with Dean Hagland about this, and that was one of the main storyline was that somebody had taken over the computer controls of a jet and was going to fly it into the World Trade Center, and he said that I was 6 months out.
May 2001, I remember.
Yeah. It was about 6 months out when they showed that on television. And when it happened, he told me, he said it was amazing that it happened. And he was also divulging the fact that sometimes Chris Carter would get ideas for scripts for the X-Files and for the Lone Gunman that were passed to him by ex-CIA agents or people who were in the know. And so it makes you wonder, doesn't it, that maybe they knew something. There's also a book called The Medusa Touch that if you read it, or it's a book or a movie called The Medusa Touch, where Richard Burton is, I think, a remote viewer. And he has the ability to, with his mind, take over controls of aircraft, and he wishes to fly a plane into the World Trade Center. So there are a number of, I guess you could call them, predictive programming type of coincidences where the World Trade Center was always in the target area where, planes would fly into the buildings and cause serious damage.
I wonder if from the moment those buildings were erected, if that was planned. I mean, they're very patient in executing all these plans. But, speaking of those...
Well, I had heard...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I had heard that when they did bring the buildings up, they had said that they were the ugliest buildings on the skyline and that someone should take them out with an aircraft. That used to always be... In fact, someone told me that lived in New York that it was the running gag, I guess, that I think of the Rockefellers or somebody. They wanted the buildings. They said something to the effect that, these are the ugliest buildings on the skyline, and if somebody was smart, they'd take them out with a bomb or an aircraft. That was basically what they'd say. So I think it was always in the cards to see those buildings come down.
I also heard asbestos and that the repair, if you will, would be so expensive that it wouldn't be worth it. And demolishing them, and I'm not saying that they were demolished. Everybody knows who listens to me that I think they were dustified by perhaps some technology that we're not aware of. And that's another story. What if this we hear about scalar weapons that could actually dustify something. I wonder if this Malaysian plane could have been dustified. And the question I always have, Clyde, is, who was inside that plane? Who was on that plane that was a matter of interest to someone?
Well, there were a group of semiconductor scientists on that plane and calligraphers. So either the calligraphers had written some horrible, horrible note to somebody and they needed to die, or the the guys who were the semiconductor inventors who were on the plane had some technology that, you know, that some idea that they had they were going to be taking to some meeting, and they didn't want anybody to know about it. That's always been, you know, look at who's on board and why, and what would be the motive for taking them out. And that's always something to look at. But I once again, that goes back to my lament and my complaint about the fact that, you know, we don't look at human beings as human beings and that they've died horrible deaths in aircraft. We look at them as things to be discussed as like we were writing a noir novel. It's like, you know, and I'm not saying that I don't do it either. I mean, and that's the thing is I'm not saying you do this, you guys are crappy and I'm wonderful. I'm not meaning that I don't do it, because I do, because I'm an American and I'm human and I'm part of it too. I'm part of this thing. And sometimes I catch myself and I wonder, you know, is this really what I want to do with the story? Because it's so easy to look at people as part of a intricate storyline or conspiracy theory without looking at the humanity, the motive, the ideas to why, who was behind it and why. Why would anyone blow the plane up, and what would be a logical explanation? Well, the logical explanation, Occam's razor tells me, would be a mechanical failure due to some atmospheric or, you know, some problem. Then I go back to, well, they fly into a meteor shower, which they did. It's documented. They fly into a meteor shower, and if a meteor did hit that plane, the electromagnetic, disturbance would knock out those transponders, and the plane would, you know, veer away to avoid something and maybe go 45,000 feet, you know, to avoid something. That's another thing. Why did they go to 45,000 feet? That's pretty high. Because maybe they felt like they were in a corridor that was, you know, being bombarded, and maybe it was a stupid move. I don't know. Maybe it was an evasive action. It was out of panic. And see, these are the things that aren't being discussed. All we're discussing now is the pilot's fanatical leanings politically, and whether or not the transponders were turned off, there was foul play. I mean, these are things that, you know, the mind is having a heyday with. And quite frankly, I'm actually getting tired of the whole story, because it just seems to me that, you know, they pretty much theoried us to the point of, you know, when they finally get the story to the point where they can push the official story, which is the story that's like a conspiracy theory in itself, people will say, well, that's what they say happened, and we're not to question it. And if you do question it, you're some guy who lives in the margins who believes in little gray men basically abducting people and taking them off into their aircraft, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know.
And of course, they're inviting the NTSB and the FBI to go there and help the investigation. And if we come out with our own story, you know what always happens. But what about those photoshopped? I mean, it seems that, Clyde, that the whole saying, don't let a crisis go to waste. All of a sudden, we see these two photoshopped pictures of two alleged Iranians. What's your take on that? To me, it's a fabrication by the Western press.
Well, here's the deal. You know that they weren't photoshopped. You know what they were done? They were composited.
Yes, yes, exactly.
The people say, oh, they photoshopped it. No, they composited the pictures so badly that I don't know why anyone even believes the story of the Iranians. And yet they will. They do. I mean, everybody tells me, well, you know, those Iranians, you know what they were going to do? They were going to fly that plane, and they were going to fit the plane to the bomb and drop it on Israel.
That's right.
Or, hey, you think that maybe the Jews took out two Iranians were on the plane? And then I say, I don't know about that. Oh, you're a Zionist shill. You shut up. Blah. You know, it's like, this is what I get. And I'm like laughing going, you know, you guys, it's a theory. Okay. It's a theory that you think this is going to happen based on who you think is the enemy. So the two Iranians who are Iranians, and Americans immediately think, suspicious brown people alert, suspicious brown people alert. They're immediately saying, oh, a suspicious brown person, two of them with composite pictures, entered on a plane with stolen passports. They must really, really, really be the culprits. Well, we don't have no proof that the passports were stolen. In fact, the story seems to, it didn't carry too much water in the press after a few weeks, or a few days, rather. And then, of course, the composites of the Iranian passengers, makes it look as if that there weren't even any Iranian passengers at all. So I don't know. You know, why would they do the composites? Why would they fake the pictures? They did, and even the Malaysian government admitted that the pictures were fake.
Yeah, lower torso, the legs are the same. Why are they getting so sloppy? And when I say that, I mean Sandy Hook. I mean Boston bombing. It's really a sloppy job lately.
It's because of the fact, the internet. It's because of the internet, that's why. Because the internet has been able to report what the mainstream media doesn't want to report. And so the mainstream media is forced, in some respects, to placate the citizen media. And that's why we're hearing of Barack Obama handing over
the internet,
the remaining parts of the internet that are American to the stakeholders of foreign interests. And that's why you're seeing this happen, because they want to be able to put more international globalist laws on the internet. Who can get, you know, URLs and names and numbers, and then have more control of the internet. And then when I heard about this, I did a show about it, and I don't think people really understood what it meant, that we, after the winter of 2015, we'll start seeing changes on the internet that we probably won't like. And this is something that I think a lot of people should pay attention to.
Well, when you think that, I think they want to give it to Russia and China, when you know that they, in China, they censor, they do. Our website was censored there for months, and somebody came to me that was traveling there as one of our members. I can't listen to you in China because you're blocked. I had to go to the embassy in Washington and three different consulates, put a radio show out there with their voices, and less than an hour later, the website was unblocked. So when we're giving the remnants of the internet to the, is it countries or is it the UN?
Well, see, that's the thing, is the UN has been wanting their fingers in the pie for some time. And that's the whole point, is that Congress has been fighting like hell. A few people in Congress have been fighting like hell to keep the UN's fingers off the internet. But now we're handing it over. And it's because of the fact that we've had something in place. It was a treaty, a telephony treaty for the longest time. And since they see the internet as part of telephony, as a communications tool, much like the telephone, they believe that it will fall under the UN's treaties about worldwide communications. And this is something that we've been fighting, because we know that if the UN has their hands in the pie, there'll be a lot of strict rules on content. In fact, the UK is already petitioning the UN to step in and to curtail what they consider content that is anti-government. And so they're fighting that right now.
And you know what happens to people like you and I if they actually implement all of this? Where's our constitutional right here, if that ever happens? Does it apply? Because there's an exterior entity managing the internet now?
What's that? Can you repeat the question?
Yes. For people like you and I, we have a constitutional right for freedom of expression, freedom of the press. But if the internet is actually overseen by an exterior force, meaning the UN or another country, how does that apply now? How is our constitutional right being, you know, put into place when there's no jurisdiction over it here?
Well, there is no constitutional right. The United States since we invented the internet, the Defense Department invented the internet, it was supposed to be a free and open source for information. And I'm sure that it was done in the purest sense of, well, we have constitution, free speech, free expression, free this, free that, free press, citizens press, which is a very important aspect of the press. It's not corporate press, it's citizens press. But see, Barack Obama hates the citizens press, and he's always said so. In fact, he made fun of a few of the websites who would criticize him. So when Obama doesn't like the citizens press aspect of the internet, then we hand it over to the UN, and the UN looks at people like you and me, and they say, well, what right does Mel Fabregas have to publish? Who is he? What's his background? Ooh, wait a minute. What's his nationality? Ooh, wait a minute. You know where I'm getting, right?
Sure.
They do that kind of thing, and then they take Mel Fabregas And if it's not enough for Mel to say, hey, I'm fighting this because I believe I have every right to publish, then they will present you in a light that's not too favorable with the public, with the court of public opinion. And immediately you have no business setting up your website or even speaking because people will never trust you again.
Correct.
And the same thing with Clyde Lewis. Clyde Lewis, whoa, what's his deal? Oh, okay, so he's this guy who does a radio show, and it's heard in 200 markets across the country. Well, what is his background? What does he do? Oh, he was involved with what? Oh, he was involved with investigating the Thai government with regards to sex trafficking? Oh, he was involved with this? He was involved with this? And then immediately they got this dossier on you, and they're going to release it to the corporate media, and the corporate media will have a heyday with you. Why? Because the corporate media also hates the internet. They use it, but they hate it. Why? Because they're in competition with it. And so this is how it's going to happen once we release all that our controls of the internet, because the international globalist board that's going to be running the internet is going to, they don't care who you are, and they don't care what you stand for. If you are doing anything that is stepping on their jackbooted globalist agenda, then you're going to find the jackboot on your face forever. It's going to be one of those things that, you know, it's going to be a different internet altogether, and people are going to have to decide whether or not they want to be on an illegal internet or a somewhat illegal internet and buy things with a somewhat illegal cryptocurrency. These are the things that are going to happen, and whether you want to participate or not is fine. But, you know, there are a lot of people out there that have their opinions, and they're all based on these old-fashioned ideas that, you know, they can't change and look at information for what it is, and it's vital for the survival of you and me and everyone else.
Absolutely, and we have to take our one and only break, Clyde. But when we come back, I want to discuss the suicides, the banker suicides, and also for people who are listening to us thinking, predictive programming, what are they trying to tell us? The Matrix, back in the movie The Matrix, Neo's passport expiration date was 9/11/01. What are the chances? And when we think of people who are traveling, let's say Clyde is traveling a month from now, or Mel is going to be traveling. I mean, JFK Jr., Paul Wellstone. Let's take, what was her name? Fuddy, the Hawaiian lady. What's her name? Loretta Fuddy. She was the health director who released President Obama's long-form birth certificate. All of a sudden, she's traveling with a few people. The plane crashes. She didn't die, but all of a sudden, she died of a heart attack while she was floating in her lifesaver, if you will. All of this when we come back with Clyde Lewis. Clyde, how can people listen to your great radio show?
They can go to groundzeromedia.org. There's a listen bar. Just listen. You have all kinds of ways to listen. You have apps. You have KXL.com broadcasts the show. I'm on iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and there are also shows that are archived on soundcloud.com/groundzeroradio.
And I know a lot of our listeners, when they listen to you on Veritas, I'm surprised they didn't know who you were, but they were so happy to have found you, and I hope that more people join Clyde and his radio show. Folks, don't go anywhere. I'm here with the great Clyde Lewis. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for listening to the first segment of this very important interview. To listen to the rest, go to veritasradio.com and subscribe. You will receive your login immediately. We'll take a short intermission, listen to some music, and we'll be right back. Enjoy.
just to make this here song rhyme.
This is Brad Steiger, and you're listening to Veritas.